The topic that we're going to discuss this morning is going to be the first in a series of a few classes. And the reason why we're doing a series is because this is an extremely important topic that everybody has to know very well. So that's why we're going to go into it in depth and make sure that everybody really comes out knowing everything they have to know about this, at least the things that are relevant to us. And that is the topic of Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos. The reason why we're talking about this particular week is because it really stems from our Parsha. So let's learn a Gemara in Yuma Daf Pehei Amud Aleph, where the whole story begins. And the question is, Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos means if somebody is sick on Shabbos, we have to do everything we can to assist them in making sure they are going to be better. We cannot allow Shabbos to get in the way of the person's cure. So there are a lot of details that we have to know about this particular question. It's not so simple, and it's not so simple in both directions. We have to make sure, we do our best to make sure that people are well. Welcome back. Wow. We have to do our best to make sure that people are well on Shabbos, and, you know, you remind me, the Gemara has a story, the Yerushalmi has about Reb Tarfon, that his mother used to take him when he was an infant in the crib to hear the shir in the Beis Medrash. And then it says, Reb Tarfon says later on, when Reb Tarfon said something in the shir, people responded and they said, Ashrei Yeladato. Ashrei Yeladato means, praise is the woman who gave birth to him. And the question is, why did they say that specifically about him? What about everybody else? Or the other great Tanaim, who also had a lot to say, why didn't they say Ashrei Yeladato? The answer is because a lot of his success came because his mother was so careful to bring him to the Beis Medrash in the state of infancy. So you never know what that child is going to become. Thanks again for joining us. So let's begin with the Gemara in Yuma Daf Pehei Amud Aleph. Says the Gemara that one time there were a couple of Tanaim who were traveling on the road together. The Gemara tells us, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, there were three Tanaim, and behind them there were two other Tanaim who were traveling along. So they're all walking, they're all traveling together. It doesn't really matter where they were going or what they were doing, but the following question was posed. Nishala she'elazu bifnehem. Says the Gemara, we're on the second line of the first entry. Nishala she'elazu bifnehem. The following question was posed to them as they were traveling together. Minayin lepikuach nefesh shedocha es ha-shabbos. How do we know that pikuach nefesh, that saving somebody's life, is more important than keeping Shabbos? Now, before we go on, why does the Gemara only ask this about pikuach nefesh and Shabbos? What about everything else? How come the Gemara doesn't go into a whole discussion about how do we know that pikuach nefesh is more important than eating kosher? Shouldn't that also be asked? Why does the Gemara only ask about Shabbos? So this is a question that many are bothered with, and some suggest that the reason why we specifically highlight Shabbos and we want to know how is one supposed to act when there is a situation of pikuach nefesh on Shabbos, the reason why we highlight Shabbos is because Shabbos, we know if a person violates the malachos of Shabbos, harehu ka'akum l'chal davar. We assume that that person is considered like a non-Jew. The Gemara says, a mechal of Shabbos befrahesya, somebody who is desecrating Shabbos. Obviously, we're not talking about somebody who doesn't know about Shabbos and doesn't know what the halachos are, but somebody who does know about Shabbos knows clearly what the halachos are. So we're told, is dino ka'akum. He's considered like a non-Jew. It goes so far that even some want to suggest that we know if a non-Jew pours our wine or does something of that nature, the wine will become usser. Some have a discussion, what if you have a person who doesn't keep Shabbos, who, as we know, is a Jew, but he's halachically not really a Jew, will that already be enough to ruin our wine that we have in our homes? This is a major question, and it's a major problem that has to be dealt with. But because we see that there's such a severity that's given, such a seriousness that's given to one who desecrates the Shabbos, therefore the Gemara wants to know, maybe Shabbos should be on a different level than everything else. Even though we know that kosher is a very important mitzvah, but if it comes to a person's life and that's all you have is something that's non-kosher, then obviously you're going to eat the non-kosher. But perhaps when it comes to the laws of Shabbos, it's not so simple. Perhaps when it comes to the laws of Shabbos, we would say that Shabbos overrides even a person's life. And that's why the Gemara wants to know, minayin lepikuach nefesh shedocha es ha-Shabbos, how do we know that a person's life is actually more important than Shabbos, and Shabbos should be desecrated in order to save somebody's life? So the Gemara here goes into a whole discussion how exactly we know it. And I'm saving everyone a lot of headache by taking out some of it. I just wrote Bechule. We don't need to know all the reasons why, how we derive that Shabbos would be pushed aside because of someone's life, but let's read the following. Nana Rabbi Shmuel v'yamar, so Rabbi Shmuel is the first one who answers, and he says a whole complicated answer, which we're not going to get into. Then Rabbi Lazar, his friend, turns to him and he says, no, I think the way that we know that pikuach nefesh is more important than Shabbos is because of the following halacha. Uma mila, we know, the pasuk says in the beginning of Parshas Tazria, Isha ki Tazria v'yalda zachar, a woman who conceives and has a child, Vayom hashmini yimol b'sar lo. So on the eighth day, you're supposed to give that child a bris milah if it's a boy. Now the Gemara learns from there in Shabbos Kuf Lamed Aleph. If we learn out from there, Vayom hashmini afilu b'Shabbos, that it means on the eighth day, doesn't matter what day of the week it is. Even if it's Shabbos, you have to do the bris milah on Shabbos, even though generally you're not allowed to do something, you're not allowed to do an incision on Shabbos, obviously if it's not for refuah, but you can't take a knife and scrape your skin on Shabbos, that would be a malacha on Shabbos. Yet when it comes to the mitzvah of bris milah, we say, Bayom hashmini afilu b'Shabbos. So the Gemara says as follows, Uma milah shehi echad mimasayim va'arboim mushmona evarim. The bris milah, which is only one of 248 limbs that a person has, Sha'adam doches haShabbos, we know that will push Shabbos aside. If the eighth day falls out on Shabbos, we will do the bris milah on Shabbos. Kal v'chomer l'chol gufo, then certainly, if for the purpose of fixing the bris milah, we are going to desecrate the Shabbos, then certainly if a person's whole life is at stake, certainly you're allowed to push Shabbos by the wayside. That's the first opinion that the Gemara has. Sounds good. Why is there a need for any other opinion? Anyone have an objection to that? No. But the Gemara has an objection. So what's the objection? The Gemara says the objection is, well, that only teaches me if it's a vadai pikuach nefesh. Let's say, person has a heart attack. If we don't treat them, they're for sure going to die. So then we learn from Mila that if the eighth day falls out on Shabbos, you do the bris Mila. So too over here, if the person has a certain danger to their life that they will not make it through, then we have to defile, we have to desecrate the Shabbos. But what if it's a suffix? What if we're not sure? Somebody has some sort of issue. Maybe if we bring them to the hospital and they stitch up the person's wound, maybe, you know, they'll get better. But maybe if we don't, it's not life-threatening. So how do you know in a case like that also that you're allowed to desecrate the Shabbos? If by bris milah, let's say you have a child who's born, and we're not sure if the child was born on Friday or on Shabbos, are you allowed to do the bris milah on Shabbos? No. Why? Because it says, by Yom HaShmini, only if you know for certain that it's the eighth day. We do find some very fascinating halachas when it comes to bris milah on Shabbos. One of them, which I think is not well known, is sometimes if you have a woman who conceives not through natural means, you have a woman who conceives through IVF or some other method of conception, and the child is born on a Shabbos, we would not do the bris milah on a Shabbos, which is very interesting. And if you have a woman who has a C-section also, we would assume that the bris milah would not be done on Shabbos. This is a major issue about who would be allowed to have a bris milah on Shabbos, but certainly only if the child is for sure born on Shabbos, that's the only time that you're allowed to do the bris milah on Shabbos. If we're not sure if the child was born on Friday or on Shabbos, then the bris milah cannot be performed on Shabbos. And therefore, assume that over here, this would not be a good way of learning out that pikuach nefesh is docheh Shabbos, because this would only teach me if it's a vadai pikuach nefesh, only if it's certain that the person's going to lose their life. But what if we're not sure? How do you know that you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos if you're not sure if someone's going to lose their life also? So to that, we need to go on. The Gemara is going to come up with a new idea of how we learn it out. Yeah. No, it's not a risk. It's if the only time you're allowed to desecrate Shabbos is when it's a vadai the eighth day, well then so too over here. Maybe the only time you're allowed to defile Shabbos to save someone's life is if for sure they're going to lose their life. That's what the Gemara is learning.
For sure.
Right, it's the for sure part, not the, yeah.
Also, even a case, if there's an eye doctor, he has to go and somebody comes through blind.
A big plug for an eye doctor, yes.
I learned that.
So we'll get to all the permutations of exactly what's considered pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. Well, we'll get to that. So then the Gemara goes on. We have to find another way of how we can learn this halacha that pikuach nefesh is docheh Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, it says, ach es shabso sai tishmoru. We have a pasuk that teaches us one has to keep the Shabbos. Yachol lakol, you might think that means under all circumstances there is never an exception to the rule. We always must keep Shabbos. Talmud Lomar, the pasuk says, ach, it means under most circumstances, but not under all circumstances, and that comes to tell us that when you have somebody whose life is in danger, Shabbos is pushed by the wayside, and we make sure to be Mechal Shabbos in order to save that person's life. So again, the Gemara says, maybe that only tells us when it's a Vadei Pikuach Nefesh, how do you know if it's a Suffik Pikuach Nefesh? How do you know if only the person's life is possibly in danger that we're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos as well? And then the Gemara goes on to say, Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef. You go on and on, skip a line, then the Gemara says, Rabshimim ben Manasya Omer, from our parsha, b'shamru v'nei Yisrael es haShabbos, famous pasuk. The Jewish people have to keep Shabbos. Lasos es haShabbos l'dorosam. That the way we're going to have Shabbos as a continuation of our religion is if we always make sure to keep the Shabbos. So says the Gemara, Amra Torah. The Torah teaches us Chalel alav Shabbos achas kedei sheyishmar Shabbos has harbe. It is worth it to violate one Shabbos in order that the person will be able to continue to keep Shabbos in the future. If the whole end game is that we want someone to keep Shabbos, well, you're right. It's worth it for us to be mechala one Shabbos in order sheyishmar Shabbos es harbi, that the person will be able to be healthy afterward and continue to serve Hashem, continue to keep Shabbos in the way they are supposed to. If you're not going to be mechala Shabbos for them, and they're going to die as a result, then they won't be able to keep Shabbos in the future. So that's what the Gemara learns from the pasuk in our parsha, v'shamru b'nei Yisrael es haShabbos. Now, if you would only have that, so what if you have, let's say, a shota? Let's say, unfortunately, you have some people who are not capable of keeping Shabbos. Some people don't understand halacha. Some people say we shouldn't save their lives on Shabbos. Of course we don't say that. Of course we don't say that. But if you would stop here, you would say maybe the only time you have a right to be mechala Shabbos for somebody's life is if you know that they are going to keep Shabbos in the future. But if you know that the person has some sort of mental deficiency, some sort of issue where they're not able to keep Shabbos, they don't understand the halachas of Shabbos, then maybe mechala Shabbos for them. Or for that matter, let's say you have, for example, if you know the person, even if you're going to save their life, the very last moments of their life, and you know that even if you save them, drastic measures, on Shabbos, your mechala Shabbos, they'll only make it till Tuesday anyway. They'll only make it till Monday. They're not going to make it to another Shabbos. So you'll say, well, too bad. If they're not going to make it to another Shabbos, forget it. There's no reason to save their lives. Absolutely, we don't say that. Even chayisha, even partial life, is considered to be, even an extension in a very small way, is still considered to be the value of life, and it's something we would be mechala Shabbos for as well. So that's why the Gemara says, this is not a good enough source. You can't stop here. We have to come up with another source of how we know that Pikuach Nefesh would override Shabbos itself. There is an interesting caveat that the Beis Yosef writes from the Rashba. Let's say you have a girl, a young girl, who is taken into captivity by the missionaries. And the missionaries are not threatening her life at all. They're going to take very good care of her. But we know if we don't go and be Mechala Shabbos to save her, she will end up not being a Jew any longer. They're going to convince her about their religion, and she's no longer going to practice Judaism. So am I allowed to be Mechala Shabbos for a case where it's not really Pikuach Nefesh, because there is no threat to her life, they're going to take very good care of her, but she is not going to remain a Torah observant Jew. So are we allowed to be Mechala Shabbos for that as well? So the Beis Yosef quotes from the Rashba that because our Gemara says, Chalel alav Shabbos achas kedesha yishmar Shabbos es harbe, it's worth it for us to violate one Shabbos in order that people should have the opportunity to keep many more Shabbos in the future. Well, then that spills over to a situation even where it's not life-threatening. If you have somebody who's being taken into captivity, and they're going to be missionary activities being done to that person, and now they're not going to remember the laws of Shabbos, we should be Mechala Shabbos to save them also, even though there's no threat to their life. Why? Because we want to make sure that in the end we have as many people keeping Shabbos as we possibly can. So that's a very interesting idea that comes out of this. You go to the last idea, and this is what the Gemara sticks with. Amar Rabbi Huda, Amar Shmuel. The pasuk says, Ushmartem es chukosai ve'es mishpatai. Asher yasa osa ha'adam v'chai bahem. We have an obligation to keep all of the mitzvos, v'chai bahem, and we're supposed to live by them. Now the simple understanding of that pasuk means, v'chai bahem means, if you keep the laws of the Torah, you will have an eternal life in Olam Haba. That's the simple understanding of what the pasuk means. However, the Gemara says we can learn from here as well, v'chai bahem v'lo sheyamos bahem. We have an obligation to do whatever we can to allow ourselves to live life and to keep God's mitzvos and to follow the laws of the Torah. God doesn't want us to give up our lives. There are the religions where the ultimate is that a person should give up their life. That's not the religion we believe in. We believe that we should do as much as we can to keep our lives here and to serve God in that way, not to give up our lives. That's not the ultimate service to God. There is a Rabbi Sif who lives in Far Rockaway, grew up right downstairs. Anybody know him? I would imagine. So he grew up right downstairs from Rabbi Ephraim Ushri in the Lower East Side. Rabbi Ephraim Ushri was an amazing personality. There's a lot of question about the books that he wrote, but he was an amazing person. He was officially the rabbi in one of the ghettos, and they claim that the books that he wrote after the war, Shalos Hatshuvos Mima'amakim, it's a fascinating series of svarim in which he claims that these were all the questions that were asked to him as the rabbi in the ghetto. And they claim that these were all the answers that he gave off the cuff without any svarim to look inside. There's a lot of discussion as to whether or not that's true, and apparently he wrote all these down on napkins and scraps of paper, and he hid them somewhere, and then he went back after the war, and he found all of his writings. A lot of conjecture whether or not this is a true story. But anyway, the Sefer is an amazing volume. It's an amazing group of Svarim, because it really shows you how much they cared about the religion, even under those conditions. And I remember Rabbi Sif told me that when he was teaching in Hafter, I don't know if he still does, but when he was teaching in Hafter, he had to do a Yom HaShoah program one year, and he went to Rabbi Ephraim Ushri, and he asked him, What do you suggest I tell the students in Hefter who have no connection? Many of their grandparents aren't even alive anymore. Many of them didn't even know any survivors. So how am I supposed to explain to them some very important message from the Holocaust? And Rabbi Ephraim Ushri told them, don't focus on how we died. Focus on how we lived as Jews, not how we died as Jews. Look at my svarim and see how we lived as Jews, how much we cared about keeping to the religion even when we were alive, even when it was hard for us. But tell them how we lived like Jews, not how we died like Jews, because the Pasuk says, V'chai b'hem v'lo sh'yamas b'hem. The ultimate experience of a Jew is not when they're ready to give up their lives and say to God, I surrender everything I have in order to have your honor more expressed. That's not the ultimate life of a Jew. The ultimate life of a Jew is v'chai b'hem, to live by the laws of the Torah every single moment, every day of our lives, even sometimes when it's a little bit difficult. So this is what the Gemara tells us. We learn, ultimately, how do we know that pikuach nefesh overrides Shabbos? How do we know you're allowed to save someone's life, even if we're not 100% sure that it's a threat to their life, but we think maybe there's a slight chance that there is a threat to their life? So then we would assume that v'chai b'hem v'lo sh'yamas b'hem kicks in. We have an obligation to live by the laws of the Torah, not to die by them, and therefore we would override the laws of Shabbos in order to save the person's life, even from a suffix pikuach nefesh. Now, once, the example my father always gives, once in every 100 years you have somebody, or it's not a good example, I gave a shiur once and I said this and people were screaming at me, we're not talking about a diabetic, somebody who has no medical history, but somebody gets an ingrown toenail. So most people who are not diabetic and get an ingrown toenail, you'll say, it's not really life-threatening. And if you were going to work that day and you just found out that you had an ingrown toenail, you wouldn't stay home from work. So just because you happen to be home on Shabbos doesn't mean you're allowed to drive to the doctor to take care of it. Even though once every 100 years in the newspaper they write up a story that somebody lost their life because of an ingrown toenail, that is something that's a very far-fetched chashash. That's a very far-fetched possibility, and therefore we would not allow someone to be mechallel Shabbos for that. But let's say you have a situation, and we'll talk about this more in the coming weeks, what exactly are the parameters of when we could be mechallel Shabbos, when we cannot. But if you have a situation where it's even a suffik pikuach nefesh, where we think that perhaps the person might lose their life, we would be allowed to be mechallel Shabbos for that person's well-being as well. Okay, so far so good? So now let's move a little bit further. This pasuk of v'chai b'hem teaches us not only that we push Shabbos by the wayside, but really that we should push any mitzvah by the wayside. Let's say somebody comes to you, God forbid somebody comes to anybody, and holds a gun to their head and says, I want you to eat this ham sandwich or else you're going to lose your life. So what's the halacha? Halacha is you should eat it. Why? Because v'chai b'hem v'lo sh'yamas b'hem. We have an obligation to live by the laws of the Torah. And even if it means that we're going to have to violate something, so we violate it in order to save our own lives. There are three exceptions to the rule. Those exceptions are Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shfichas Damim, the big cardinal sins that we assume even if a person comes to you and says that you are going to lose your life unless you bow down to the Avodah Zarah, you have to be willing to give up your life for that, because we assume that these three things are considered such monumental averas, such cardinal sins, that we would assume a person has to be willing even to give up a life and not to violate those. So what's the halacha, let's say, by something else? The first example we gave is if somebody comes to an individual and says, if you don't eat this non-kosher item, I am going to take your life away. What if a person decides, you know what, I love God so much, I want to give my life up instead of eating the ham sandwich? Why? So this is subject to a debate in the Rishonim. The Rambam, what? So we're talking about a simple case. Somebody comes over privately and asks you to violate a certain avera in the Torah, not from the cardinal sins. So the halacha dictates that you're not supposed to give up your life. What if I decide I love God so much, I don't want to violate any of his laws, I want to give up my life anyway? So this is subject to a big dispute in the Rishonim, the Rambam on the one hand, and Rabbeinu Tam, the Balei Hatosas, on the other hand. The Rambam says as follows, I forgot to put it on here, but listen carefully. Kishayamud Oved Kochavim, if you have a non-Jew comes to you, via anoses haYisrael laver alachas mikol mitzos haamuras batorah o yahargenu, and he gives me an ultimatum. He says, either you will violate this rule in the Torah, or I'm going to take away your life. Yavar vayaharig. Obviously, we know you're supposed to violate the law in the Torah, and you should not give up your life. Shenemar, because our Gemara teaches, asher yasa osa adam v'chai b'hem, and we learn from there v'chai b'hem v'lo sh'yamas b'hem. Now, says the Rambam, v'imeis v'lo avar. What if I voluntarily decide that I want to give up my life and not violate the Aveira? Hareze mischayev benafsho. It is as if you have committed suicide. It is as if you have committed suicide. I was once speaking in Los Angeles about the topic of suicide in a hospital to a whole room of irreligious doctors and nurses, medical professionals. It was an interesting kind of shiur. I had no idea that nobody was going to be Froome. Nobody told me that beforehand. So I prepared a regular shiur. I showed up, and it was interesting. So I was talking about the issue of suicide, and almost no one in the room was aware that suicide is an Isser D'Oraisa. Suicide is a biblical prohibition for somebody to commit suicide. Ach, as Dimchem L'Nafsho Seichem Edrosh, in Parshas Noach, we learn, if a person chooses to commit suicide voluntarily, we're even told, Ein Lo Chelek L'Olam Haba, you lose your portion in Olam Haba. We consider committing suicide to be an extremely cardinal sin. That's something one is not allowed to do. However, if we're talking about somebody who commits suicide because they have some sort of issue or because of depression and they're not able to live on with life or they can't deal with the suffering, then the same way we say by any other mitzvah in the Torah that onas rachmana patri, if somebody does something under extreme duress and they have no way of getting around it, then obviously we would not hold the person accountable. But if somebody does it, kiderach hafilosofim, I know what I think, there's no reason to live life anymore, not because of depression, not because of anxiety, not because of anything else, not because of my financial needs, but because I think life is not worth living, or I believe that God doesn't care about us, or I do a kiderach hafilosofim, they say, somebody who does it because they think that this is what God really wants of me, you're going to have a large price to pay when you get upstairs. You can't pay in your life anymore because you've just taken it, but you're going to have a large price to pay and answer as to why it is that you took your life. So over here as well says the Rambam, if the Torah dictates that you should not be giving off your life in order to save yourself from violating certain Avera, and you voluntarily choose that you want to give up your life anyway, says the Rambam, you are like somebody who has committed suicide. Okay, so it's very strong words that the Rambam tells us about somebody who chooses to do that. Rabbeinu Tam, in the Tosfos, he disagrees, and he says, no, all we're told is, asher yasa osa adam achai behem, you have the right to violate any law in the Torah in order to save your life, but if you want to volunteer and give up your life for anything else, you have a right to do that as well. The only time you don't have a choice is when we talk about the three cardinal sins, avodah zarah, gil arayos, shfichas damim, that's the only time you don't have a right and you absolutely must give up your life, instead of violating those cardinal sins. Okay, so that's so far the halacha that we know. The Shulchan Aruch says in Hilchos Shabbos, Siman Shin Chav Ches, Shulchan Aruch tells us that it is a mitzvah to be Mechal Shabbos in order to save someone's life. It is a mitzvah to be Mechal Shabbos in order to save someone's life. In fact, there is a discussion in the Yachronim as to whether or not a person after Shabbos should go and klap al chet, should he daven a long Shmona Esrei Sunday morning because, I had to drive to the hospital on Shabbos to save someone's life. So some say, yes, in the end of the day, yes, you did something nice, you're a wonderful person, but in the end of the day, you have something to answer to God, and you should think about it during your davening on Sunday morning. And other Achronim say, no, how can you say such a thing? It is a mitzvah, the Shulchan Aruch says, to go and save somebody's life on Shabbos, even if it means desecrating the Shabbos. And therefore, because we assume that it is a mitzvah, there is no need for any tshuva process. There's no reason to make up for any wrongdoing. I didn't do anything wrong whatsoever. And in fact, what I did was something that was very advisable. It was something that's very commendable. And we would never tell the person to do a tshuva on that. In fact, the Ben Ish Chai writes in one of his svarim, if you come to shul Sunday morning and you see the Hatzalah guy is sitting there, slach lono, and he's crying over his siddur and he's going crazy and whatever, the Ben Ish Chai writes, Adarabba, mochem miyado, we'll yell at that person and tell him, don't do such a thing. Why? Because what message are you giving over to other members of your community? You're giving over the message that, please, next Shabbos, don't call me because I feel so bad about what just happened. And therefore, says the Ben Ish Chai, even if you want to be such a big tzaddik and ask for a kapara over the fact that you're a mechal Shabbos, you shouldn't do so, and we as a community should stop you from doing so because that is ultimately going to lead to a far worse consequence, that next time people are going to second-guess themselves as to whether or not they should call the Hatzalah, whether or not they should get involved, whether or not they should be Mechal Shabbos. So this is a very important halacha, that we assume that Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, anyone who's involved in it, is performing a mitzvah. The Shulchan Aruch even goes further as to say, let's say I come to a scene and it turns out that the person has already passed away, God forbid. So there's no need. Everything I did, I drove to the person's house, I got a call on the radio that they had a heart attack or whatever it might be, and now I get there and it turns out there's nothing I can do to save their life. Or I come to the scene and it turns out it's only an ingrown toenail. The mother was going crazy. She thought it was a real life-threatening illness. I come there and I say, come on, you didn't really have to be Mechal Shabbos for this. Shulchan Aruch says you have still performed the mitzvah even if you get there and it turns out that there was no need for you to go at all. Because while you were going, you felt that you were doing the right thing. You felt you were doing a mitzvah. Because it is a mitzvah to be involved in life-saving activities on Shabbos. And therefore we assume that this is the halacha. We should do whatever we can to save people's lives on Shabbos. Rav Asher Weiss has, and if you look at number Beis, a very fascinating shaila where he talks about something which is actually pretty common. So he says, Nish'alti palmim rabot, I've been asked the following question many times. Be'anshei ha-hatzala, for the members of Hatzala, she'nikru la-hatzil nivga'i tu'na. Sometimes on Shabbos you have an accident, or you have somebody calls in with a certain problem. O'chavala, a child falls off the swing, and they call the Hatzala right away. B'safik pikuach nefesh, the kid's head is bleeding, and we're not sure exactly what's going on, and we obviously have to do our best to call the Hatzala, make sure that we have a paramedic who's going to come and check the person out, and make sure that everything is safe. So this person goes, and the mother rightfully calls the Hatzala because she's nervous, and now the paramedic gets there, and he has the whole scene under control. Now, he knows, harishon shemagia lezira, the first paramedic that gets to the scene of the accident, hitzilas kol mashanita. He takes care of the whole situation, bandages the kid up, takes care of everything, and he assesses that there's no longer a situation of life-threatening illness. Oh, shenochach ladasha ima sakana, he has it under control, no reason for other people to be mechala shabbos. Should he radio back, or should he take his cell phone and call all the other members and tell them, we don't need you, stay home? Again, a call goes out on the radio, 10 members of Hatzala jump into their cars. First guy who gets there sees, not a life-threatening illness. Should he radio back to everybody and say, we don't need you, everything's under control, it's not a sakana anymore, I've taken care of everything that's dangerous, and you can all go back home? So what do you say? It's a very important question. So he says, maybe I should do that in order to save the other 10 people from being Mechala Shabbos. On the other hand, if I take myself and I call them, what am I doing? I'm being Mechala Shabbos. So should I be Mechala Shabbos to save other people from Chilul Shabbos? So this is in fact a Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Shabbos. The Gemara has the following story. We know that you're not allowed to bake on Shabbos. So how did they used to bread back in the days of the Gemara? They used to have a round oven, and they would take a piece of dough and stick it onto the side of the oven. That's called a violation of the malacha of ofa on Shabbos. You baked on Shabbos if the bread stayed there long enough to actually get baked. What happens if somebody comes along? I put my dough onto the side of the oven. If we leave everything as is, I'm going to violate the malacha of baking on Shabbos. Now I leave. I forgot about what I did. I left. I leave my dough on the oven. I did something I wasn't supposed to do. Somebody comes along and sees, Shechter just put some dough on the oven. What's he doing? He's going to violate the malacha of ofa on Shabbos. So he comes along with a stick, and he wants to scrape off the bread from the side of the oven. This way, he'll save me from violating the Aveira of Ofa on Shabbos. So baking on Shabbos is a biblical prohibition. Taking challah off the side of the oven is called Ridiyas HaPas. That's a rabbinic prohibition. So the Gemara says, should I as an innocent bystander come along and violate an Isur D'Rabbanan of taking the bread off the side of the oven in order to save Shechter from a horrible Aveira of baking on Shabbos? So this is a major discussion that the Gemara has. Should we say, Chatei b'shvil sheyizka chavercha? Should I do something wrong in order to save somebody else from something which is much worse? So that's a discussion that the Gemara has, and the ultimate answer is, we assume that you should not violate a halacha in order to save someone else. Their problem is their problem. We don't look at the overall perspective as what is going to be violated, either a biblical prohibition or a rabbinic. We look at you. You're coming and asking the question, did you do something wrong? No. You didn't do anything wrong, so therefore you shouldn't get involved. He's going to have to answer for the problem that he created. You shouldn't be sacrificing any Aveira on your part in order to save him from an Aveira that he did on his part. So now you come to our question over here. Should I radio into other people and tell them that really we don't need them? Should I violate a Malacha D'Rabbanan in order to save 10 people from driving their cars and violating Malacha D'Oraisa? It's a major question. But one of the very important issues that you have to know about why we would maybe assume that you shouldn't call in is not only because we assume that we never say chatei b'shvil sheyizka chavercha. We never say that I should sacrifice an aveira in order to save someone else from a more serious aveira. But another component to this issue is, well, all of them are driving now. And all of them think they're involved in a life-saving activity. So as far as they're concerned, they are doing a mitzvah. If I call them, then it turns out they have no right to do what they're doing anymore. So what are you going to say when you balance the issue and you say, should I violate a malacha d'rabbanan by calling on the cell phone and telling them not to come? Or should I just leave everything as is? What's the answer? Leave everything as is. Why? Because right now, all the 10 people who are driving are doing something that they think is the right thing to do. Like the Shulchan Aruch tells us, even if you show up at a scene and the person has already passed away, or it turns out that it's not a life-threatening illness, so we assume that you still have performed the mitzvah because you did your best to try to be involved in life-saving activities on Shabbos. So this is a very important question that comes up quite often. Now, this doesn't mean that every time we have any sneeze in our house, we should be calling the Hatzala. You talk to the Hatzala members in our community, and they are so upset about the fact not only that they have to stop their Shabbos meals in the middle every single week to go tend to everybody. Again, if it's a life-threatening illness, they're more than happy to do so. But how often do we talk to the Hatzalah members and they tell us that people are just calling the Hatzalah because they don't want to drive to the hospital, so they'll call the Hatzalah member to drive to the hospital. So number one, if let's say you have somebody who needs stitches, and your hospital is 10 minutes away, like we have over here, and you have bandaged it up for now, but you know that they need stitches. So you know what? You should drive to the hospital yourself. Why are you making a Hatzalah member come to your house to drive you to the hospital? You should take them on your own. There's no reason to get more people involved in the Chil Shabbos. You should drive on your own. That's number one. Somebody pointed out that it could be if you show up to a hospital without a paramedic or without some sort of medical professional, you might not get treated. I don't know if that's true or not. If it's true, then I guess what I'm saying is not correct. If it's not true, then what I'm saying is correct, and we should do our best. There's no reason to make the Hatzalah members, is no more of a heter for them to be Mechal HaShabbos than for us. Anyone who's involved in a life-saving activity should do whatever they can to save a life. If it's not a life-threatening illness, then we really should not be getting involved. Then we're going to get into a discussion next week or the week after about what if it's not life-threatening, but it's a sakanas aver. Like you said, somebody has some damage to their eye, and if you don't treat it right away, they're going to lose the eye. Somebody has some damage to a finger. If you don't treat it right away and you don't sew up, they're not going to have use of that finger anymore. So sakanas aver is a question we're going to have to deal with as well. Let's move on a little bit further. The Ramban tells us that if somebody has a situation of pikuach nefesh on Shabbos, and they choose not to treat it because they say, you know what, Shabbos is so sacred, Shabbos is so holy, I don't want to get involved, I don't want to be mechal Shabbos, says the Ramban, harei ze chasidus shel shtus. This is a foolish way of acting. It's not, you're not a big tzaddik for doing that, it's a chasidus shel shtus, says the Ramban. V'dino k'shofech damim. You are like a shofech damim, you're like committing murder. Why? Because you never know. You never know. By vacillating, by questioning whether or not you should go to the hospital, by questioning whether or not you should get a medical professional involved, you might be subject to being responsible for the person's life that may have just been lost. B'hu mischai b'nafsha. That's what the Ramban tells us. And going catapulting from there, I guess, the Magen Avraham quotes him a Radvaz. Forgetting about Shabbos, let's say you have a patient who during the regular day of the week gets sick, and the patient comes to a hospital, and the doctor assesses the situation and says, you know, you're going to need this surgery, that treatment, whatever it is, and you'll be able to leave in a week or two, everything's going to be fine, you're just going to have to heal. Patient says, no, I don't want any treatment, I'd rather die from this illness than be treated. So the Magen Avraham quotes in the Radvaz that a patient does not have a right to make that decision. Again, now that's a very complicated issue. If we're talking about somebody who's suffering and it's the end of life or whatever it is, and they don't want to live like a vegetable, they have every right to say, sign a DNR, I don't want to continue living life with such pain, such suffering. You have every right to say that. But if we're talking about a case where you have 90% of the people, or 60% of the people would say, yeah, it's worth it to have this treatment in order that I should be able to have a nice, fulfilled life afterward, says the Magen Avraham, even if the person is screaming up and down and saying they don't want the treatment, you don't have a right to make that decision. And we as a community will force you to take the treatment in order that you'll be able to have a fulfilled life going forward. This is the reason why we assume that is because the Radvaz says, Ein nafsho shel adam kinyano. Hanefashos li heina. Your life does not belong to you. It's not in your hands to decide whether or not you think that life is worth living. Again, if the situation is where 90% of the people would say life is not worth living under such conditions, so then okay, you have a right to sign that DNR and to say you don't want treatment. But if the condition is that 90% of the people would say, of course we want to continue to live life, then you would not be listened to and we would force the treatment. Anyway, I'm not sure how that would work legally, but We would assume that you don't have a right to make such a decision, which is based on this Ramban, that again, a person doesn't have a right to say, well, it's Shabbos, I don't want to be Mechal Shabbos, even if it means that I'm going to lose my life. You don't have a right to make such a decision. The Torah dictates to us that Shabbos should be desecrated in order that you should be saved. There is a gripping letter that is written in the late 1800s by the Shemi Shmuel. Shemi Shmuel was the son of the Abnei Nezer, and his son-in-law had some very life-threatening illness. And the Shemi Shmuel writes his son-in-law a letter right before Yom Kippur about how his son-in-law should act on Yom Kippur. So let's read it together. He says as follows. In the beginning he says how he heard that this terrible illness that you have, and he wishes him well, and then he says the following. Aval kasher Yom HaKippur mimash meshuba. Now that we're around the time of year where Yom Kippur is right around the corner, hineni lahazhircha, I am here to remind you and to warn you, me'od, I am here to warn you in the strongest of terms, the Baal Titzdok Harbe B'Davar Hatzom. Don't try to be a tzaddik with regard to fasting on Yom Kippur. V'chafi asher yom alacha ha-doctor, kein tishmar la'asos. Whatever the doctor instructs you to do in order for your health to be okay, that's what you should do. Im yomru shadai pachas mikashir, if the doctor tells you, well, you don't have to eat so much, take every 9 minutes this, a little bit of water, then fine. Hainu pachas mikabetza b'toch 8 minute. Ah, however, bim yomru shagam zelo yaspik, if the doctor tells you no, you have to eat like a regular person. Your regular diet has to be followed on Yom Kippur as well. Chalila l'chala hachmir, he says. You don't have a right to be machmir and to say, well, it's Yom Kippur, I'm not going to eat. Chalila l'chala hachmir. Kimi shad siva latsum yom kippurim, the same God that commanded us to fast on Yom Kippur, hu shad siva l'shma l'rofei v'shalo latsum, that's the same God that also commanded us that we should listen to our doctors and b'chai b'hem, we should do our best to make sure that we're healthy. Ve'al tachshav, and don't think, she'en lahatir ela l'chola she'yesh bo sakana l'shaito, don't this means that only if the risk is that you're going to die on Yom Kippur itself do you have a right to eat? No. If it's going to make your condition deteriorate, even to hasten your death by a few days after Yom Kippur, you should not be doing that either. Chalila, ela afilu l'svek sveka ki ein holchem b'pikuach nefesh achar harov. We don't take chances when it comes to people's lives. And even if there is a slight possibility that this will deteriorate your condition, you don't have a right to be machmir and fast on Yom Kippur. Va'afilu l'zman meruba shenein ha'adam yachal lahachmir. And then the letter goes on and then he says the following. Very important line. U'betach zachar tizkar. Make sure you remember ma shekvar shamati mimenu habei pa'amim. Make sure you remember. You know, every father-in-law has things that they like to say a lot. So here, I guess this was a recurrent theme that was said in their house. What was that? She'ikur hayadus. The backbone, the basis of all that we believe in, is liyos ha'adam batel adas ha'torah v'chachameha. That a person should subdue themselves. They should be subordinate to what the Torah tells them to do. Va'afidu she'yomer l'cha al smoshu yamin. V'zeh she'adam evatel daito l'das ha'torah v'chof aznecha l'shma dirich ha'chamim hu sheva yosem ha'kol. If the doctors and the rabbis tell you you should be eating on Yom Kippur, that is worth more than anything else. Because your ultimate job in life is to follow the laws of the Torah. Not to do what you think is right, but to do what the Torah tells you is right. And over here, in a case like this, the Torah tells you, V'lachein, kein ein lach lehitzdar im lo tatzim yom kippurim. Don't be pained by the fact that I told you that you should eat this year on Yom Kippur. Ki b'mesh ha'tishma l'das chachmei ha'torah shetziva shel ha'latzim. By you listening to those who told you that you should not fast this year, im ha'rofei tziva shel ha'latzim, with the consultation of a doctor, Hushave yoser me'ikar hatzom. That is more important than all of those who are fasting. Your job this year on Yom Kippur is do your best to make sure you eat healthy. Do your best to make sure you stay healthy and your condition does not deteriorate. And that is your job, which is equal to the job of everybody else who is healthy, that they're not going to eat on Yom Kippur. And he ends off and he says, V'chein, and therefore, based on all of this introduction, Leich echal b'simcha l'achmecha, go out and eat and rejoice on Yom Kippur. We should say b'leiv tavas yinecha. Take out the wines, take out the steaks, make a barbecue. Ki kvar ratzah ha'elokim es ma'asecha, because God is so proud that you're listening to Him and you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing at this juncture in your life. So this is an important note that comes up on Yom Kippur as well. We always have these shilas. People come every year before Yom Kippur and ask, should I be fasting, should I not? Sometimes you have the people who are a joke. You know, I had a woman who came when I was in the white shul, a woman who came and said, I'm 3.5 months pregnant, should I fast on Yom Kippur? You know, there's no known sakana to the child at all. There's no sakana to the woman. Yes, it's uncomfortable. I've never been pregnant. However, I have been told that it's very uncomfortable, and certainly at certain stages of the pregnancy it's uncomfortable, but uncomfortable is not a reason for you to eat on Yom Kippur. As my father always tells people, you should sit home in an air-conditioned room, don't go to shul at all, and that's more important than all your davening that you're going to do on Yom Kippur. And not only that, my father will suggest to people that the husband should stay home as well if the wife has to take care of the kids, and because of that she's not going to be able to fast, and she's going to have to break it. Let the husband stay home. He shouldn't be sitting in shul all day. How do you like that? Yes. Question? No? Okay. In fact, in the Sefer Torah Sayoledes, it's a Sefer that's all about all the shalas that can come up about childbirth, which is a fascinating Sefer. So in the Sefer Torah Sayoledes, he writes that there's a tefillah that he found in the old Machzorim for Yom Kippur, that a Yoledes, that a woman should say if she has to eat on Yom Kippur because of her condition. Let's read what he says at the bottom of the page. Before eating on Yom Kippur, this old machzor says one should say the following: Hineni muchan umezuman lekayim mitzvah achila ushtia biyom kippurim. I am prepared. When do we say hineni muchan umezuman? Before we shake lulav, before we blow shofar, before we do all these things, we say hineni muchan umezuman. What do we say over here? Hineni muchan umezuman lekayim mitzvah achila ushtia biyom kippurim. I am prepared to fulfill my mitzvah, my obligation of eating and drinking on Yom Kippur, because that is my obligation now. Like we learned in our Gemara, and because of the merit of me following this mitzvah that I'm supposed to be doing right now of eating, Tachto mosiv es kol chole ama Yisrael refuah shalema. God, you should have mercy on us, and you should make all chole Yisrael have a refuah. The ezke biyom kippur maba, and I should have the merit on the next Yom Kippur. The kaim shiv to once again keep Yom Kippur the way everybody else does. V'inisam es nafshasechem ken yihi ratzon amen. What a beautiful tefillah. But it puts a little bit into context of what we're supposed to be feeling if we unfortunately are in that situation where we might have to eat on Yom Kippur. Like Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach pointed out, when we have a bris milah on Shabbos, do we cry about the fact that we're mechallel Shabbos? No, that's what the Torah tells us to do. So too over here. If the doctor and the rabbi tell you that you have to eat on Yom Kippur, so that's what you have to do. You shouldn't be crying about it. You shouldn't be feeling bad. This is what your obligation, this is what your duty is. It's told about the Divrei Chaim, who was the Rav and Sanz. He was the Zion of the Sanz dynasty. He was the first Rebbe. So he said that one year on Pesach, the doctors told him before Pesach he had some sort of condition and he wasn't allowed to eat Mar. So he told all the Hasidim, I'm sorry, this year I'm not going to eat Mar. They sat down to the Seder and everyone's looking, what's he going to do? When it comes up to Mar and the Seder, how's he going to act? What's he going to do? So they get up to Mar and he tells his Gabbai, please bring the Mar to the table. Gabbai says, what do you mean? Did he forget what the doctor said? But he didn't want to say anything, so he brings the Mar to the table and everyone's crowding around looking, what's the Rebbe going to do? Why is he asking for the Mar? And he picks up the mar, and everyone's wondering, picks up the mar, doesn't he know the doctor's been talking about this for weeks, he's not allowed to eat the mar, and he says, Baruch Atah Hashem, Baruch, why is he making a bracha? He's not allowed to make a bracha, and he says, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Asher Kedushanu Mimitzvos Vitzivanu, Al Mitzvos Ushmartem Es Nafshasechem. And he put the mar down. That right now, I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of looking after myself, and doing what God expects me to do by not eating the mar. My father says every year, there is a doctor, he's still alive, Dr. Neuberger, who is my father's chavrusa, he's Rabbi Yaakov Neuberger's brother. So he was an emergency room doctor for many years in Maimonides Hospital in Brooklyn, and he said the two most popular nights of the year of having religious patients in the hospital is the two nights of the Seder, because people are drinking wine they're not supposed to drink, they're eating too much matzah they're not supposed to be eating, and he said there are more religious patients on the two nights of the Seder than any other day of the year. My father always commented, that is manche rusenu. This is how we show we express our freedom by ending up in the emergency room on Pesach. That's not what God wants from us. If the doctor says a person can't have matzah, so you don't eat matzah. If the doctor says a person can't have mar, so you don't eat mar. You live on. And that's your job this year, is not to do it. Like the Sanz HaRav said, Ushmartem es nafshasechem, you're fulfilling a tremendous mitzvah by not doing it. You look at the next entry, and you'll notice that it looks a little bit funny and it looks a little bit tattered. And the reason for that is because it was written by someone by the name of Rabbi Yisachar Bernard Davis, who was a Rav in Holland. He was killed in the Holocaust 2 months before the liberation of Bergen-Belsen. And he was an incredible personality. He acted as the Rav in Bergen-Belsen as well. And people would come and ask him all sorts of questions. And it came 1 year before Pesach, and he realized that if he's not going to allow everybody to eat chametz on Pesach, well, what were they eating already in the camps? All they got was the leftover little scraps from a piece of bread. And he said, if he's not going to allow the community to eat the chametz on Pesach, they're all going to be at risk for losing their lives in the camps because they're not going to eat anything over the whole duration of Yom Tov. And he got up in public and he said, this year our mitzvah is we all need to eat chametz on Pesach. In 1944, that's what he said. And then he gave out the following paper over here. And you'll look online. This is really the original. This is really what it is. He wrote it on some scrap in the concentration camp in Bergen-Belsen. This is what he wrote to the community. And he said, Lefnei achilas hachametz yomer bekavanas alev. Before eating the chametz on Pesach, a person should have a lot of concentration and say the following. Avinu shebashamayim, hine gali v'yadua lefanecha, you know clearly, sheretzoneinu lasas ritzonecha. You know that we really want to do what you ask of us. V'lecho gizchaga Pesach b'achilas hamatzah, you know that really we would want nothing more than to eat matzah on Pesach, uv'shmiras isra chametz, and to stay away from eating chametz throughout the duration of Yom Tov. Ach alzos da'va libeinu. But we are so sad, we are so pained about the fact, shehashibud ma'ake bosanu. Here we are in Bergen-Belsen, and we're being forced to live under conditions that we don't want to live. And we're being forced to keep the religion in ways that we never imagined we would keep it. Va'anachnu nimtzaim b'sakanas nefashos. We are found in a situation where our lives are literally at stake. And if we do not eat chametz this year, we will not survive this. Hinenu muchanim umuzumanim. We are prepared, l'kayim mitzvasecha, to perform your mitzvahs av v'chavahem, the asterisks on the bottom, v'lo shiyamas behem, v'lizahar me'azharasecha. We are doing our best to perform the mitzvah that you told us to perform. Hishama l'cha reshmar nafshecha miyod. Al-kein, and therefore we offer, tfilasenu, l'cha shetechayenu, that you should allow us to continue to be alive, uskaimenu, and you should give us endurance, you should take us out of here. We should be redeemed speedily from this concentration camp. Lishmar chukecha, in order that we have the opportunity to keep to all of your laws, all of your commandments, v'lasas v'tzonecha u'le'avdecha b'leivav shalem, amen. What a beautiful tefillah, but it sort of puts into context that there are times throughout the year when we have an obligation to bend the laws of the Torah, because otherwise there will be a serious threat to a person's life. Yes? His name was, 1 second, Rabbi Yisachar Bernard Davids. Bergen-Belsen, 1944, Tafshin Dalid. That's when he wrote this letter to his community that this is what they should say on Pesach before eating the chametz that they have to eat, unfortunately, under those conditions. Now, the Shulchan Aruch says, when he talks about Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, Hazariz Harezeh Meshuvach, somebody who runs to the call, somebody who runs to take care of the person who's sick, you're wonderful. All the superlatives, Harezeh Meshuvach, wonderful person. V'hashoel, but somebody who runs to the rabbi to ask a shaila. You have a kid who falls off the swing and the kid is bleeding from his head. You're going to say, oh, one minute, I'm not sure. Should we really call the doctor or not? You run to the rabbi. Hashoel, hareza shofech damim, says the shochach. If you choose to go and ask the rabbi a shayla, you're considered like a shofech damim because you never know what a few seconds can do. It can impact a person's life negatively, and that's something you will never be able to get back. And therefore the Shulchan Aruch says, hashoel, somebody who chooses to ask a shayla on Shabbos about whether or not they should go to the hospital, hareza shofech damim, you are considered part of an act of murder. Now, the Yerushalmi tells us, Hanishal, what does it mean, Hanishal? The person who was asked, meaning the rabbi, Hareze Maguna, you're a fool. So what do you want from me? What did I do wrong? I know the halacha. Why is it my problem that somebody came? And the Mefarshim explained, the reason why is because you're obviously not a good rabbi if somebody in your community doesn't know the halacha of what they're supposed to do on Shabbos when there's an issue. Because the first, so my father always says, what do you mean? Maybe I didn't get up to it. I've been giving shiur 9 months here, and I'm not up to there. Now we got up to it. So the answer is, what you see, my father always says, is what you see is this is the first series of shiurim you should give in any community that you're in. This way, nobody will have a question as to when it comes up on Shabbos, how we're supposed to act. Everybody must know these halachas very well. Hashoel hareza shofech damim, v'hanishal hareza maguna. Somebody who has asked the shayla, it shows you're not doing a good job as rabbi because you should have educated the people to know what the halacha is and how they should act under these kind of situations. I remember a person once came to my father and he asked that he was Mechal Shabbos, and it turned out that he really should not have been. His son got hurt and whatever, and he thought it was life-threatening, and it turns out that he wasn't, and he asked my father, should I do a tshuva for that? My father said, you don't need tshuva, your rabbi to tshuva, because your rabbi didn't teach you how you're supposed to act when it comes to these situations on Shabbos, and therefore it's a big responsibility. You look in Hilchos Yom Kippur, the Mishnah Berurah number above, the Mishnah Berurah tells us, in Siman Taf Reish Yud Ches, Tzarech kol morei hora lios dinim shel pikuach nefesh shegurim befiv mi be'erev Yom HaKippurim. A rabbi, a Mori Hara, has to know all of these halachas of Pikuach Nefesh inside out before Yom Kippur starts. What's going to happen? Someone's going to knock on your door. You know, I'm sorry, Rabbi. Someone just had a heart attack. Should we drive to the hospital on Yom Kippur or not? 1 second, let me look it up. Oh, sorry, someone borrowed that volume from my study. I don't have it. You know what? Let me go to the next door neighbor. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what's going to happen? And therefore, the Mishnah Berurah says it's the obligation of any community leader who has asked Shilas on Yom Kippur or on Shabbos to know these halachos clearly, that you don't have to look it up. If you're going to have to spend time looking it up, you never know, that can have catastrophic consequences. This is what the Mishnah Berurah teaches us. And he says, you have to be so careful about every single detail, knowing everything of what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do, and that's why we're going to continue next week. But let's just close with the following. These are halachos that we certainly have to know. It's halachos that we have to know very well. We have to be clear about. We can't have to have questions. We have to know very well what we're supposed to do, which, by the way, we can all join on Sunday morning. Rav Asher Weiss will be here from 10 o'clock to 11:30, where he'll discuss many medical issues, but part of the things I asked him to discuss is what we're talking about here. What are the protocols for what we're allowed to do on Shabbos and what we're not? I remember when my first son was born. He was born on a Friday night, and he was born in the middle of the night. By the time the morning came, my wife was already in postpartum. She was already in a room, and everything was fine. Everything was healthy. The kid was in the NICU. My son was in the NICU. My wife was in the bed, sleeping. So I told her I'm going to go to shul, which was a few blocks away, and I'll be back in a few hours. So I went to shul, and I come back. And as we know on the maternity ward, so you have one side is for the women who are in labor, the other side is for the postpartum. But in between, they have a hallway. And because they're always afraid of everybody stealing babies, I don't know, so they have all these doors with all the push buttons that you have to be able to get through. So I got back from shul, and I'm standing there in the hallway waiting for a doctor or a nurse to push the button that I can go in, right? So there I am waiting a couple of seconds, and I see there's a boy who was sitting there eating a Shabbos meal in the hallway as well. So I asked him, you know, is everything okay? He says, yeah, my wife is in labor. We haven't had a baby yet. I didn't think it was right to eat in front of my wife if she's not allowed to eat. So I came out for a few minutes, and I'm eating in the hallway. Very nice of him. So he says, and what are you doing here? I said, you know, we had a baby last night, and now my wife is in postpartum. We're on the other side of the hole. He says, so what are you waiting here for? I said, I'm waiting here because I'm waiting for someone to push the button. He says, what do you mean? It's pikuach nefesh. You have to push the button. I said, that's not pikuach nefesh. My wife is being very well taken care of by all the doctors and nurses that know how to take care of her much better than I do after she has a baby. And I don't see any level of pikuach nefesh here. There's no life-threatening illness. There's nothing. Yes, it's uncomfortable after you have a child, but there's no reason that she needs her husband differently in the next 5 seconds to go in. You wait another minute and a half, and somebody will come through. So the guy got so upset at me, he says, you know, if you're going to be machmir on pikuach nefesh, I'll do it for you. And he goes and he pushes the button. So he had no idea who I was. And I was very shaken up by that. I said, well, it's very nice you were just Mechal Shabbos for me, which we weren't allowed to do. But now that you were Mechal Shabbos because you weren't allowed to, I'm not even allowed to go through, because if someone does a Chil Shabbos for you that they weren't supposed to do, so you're not even allowed to get any benefit from the malacha that was just done. So then I had to wait again for a doctor and a nurse. Now that he pushed the button, it was already open, so the doctors and nurses are going through, so I had to wait again another few minutes in order to go in myself. The point is, after Shabbos, I came back and I spoke to his Rosh Hashiva, and I said, you have boys in your yeshiva who are going every week to have children, and they don't know the halachos, and they don't know that when their wife is in postpartum, that's not an excuse to be Mechal Shabbos. It's not an excuse to ask a non-Jew to get the elevator for you and to bring you upstairs and to open the doors. You're not allowed to do that. It's really not a situation of pikuach nefesh. And we have to be very careful that even though we stress and we highlight the importance of pikuach nefesh on Shabbos, of doing whatever we can to save somebody's life, we have to know, are we really saving somebody's life, or are we just doing it for ourselves? Do we want to go into the postpartum room just because we want to be with our wives, or because we want to be there, we want to see the baby, or are we doing it because we feel it's really a situation of pikuach nefesh, and this is going to help that situation that is unfolding? Generally, I would assume most of the times when you're in a hospital and you're just going in and out, you're staying with the patient for Shabbos, it is generally, almost always, not pikuach nefesh to push the button, and therefore we would really have no right to do so, because there is no danger to the person. The doctors and nurses are taking very good care of them, and we would really not have to do that. Obviously, there are exceptions to every rule, and every case is a little bit different. But hopefully in the coming weeks, we'll have a little bit more clarity as to what we are and are not allowed to do on Shabbos. Yeah.